Okay, thanks.
So this talk is going to be a little bit unconventional in that I'm not going to talk about my own research. And I'm also going to talk about something which is seemingly very basic and something where one might not expect that there's actually quite a lot to say about it. And so this something is going to be equality. And so kind of, I think there's going to be no original research in this talk, so just take it as sort of food for thought or some kind of inspiration, hopefully. So as physicists, we are sort of used to just working with equations, right? Like sequences of equations, manipulating functions or formulas. And but actually, if you look at that in a little bit more detail, what these equations mean, it does depend a little bit on the context. And so there are equations for different kinds of things. For example, there are equations between numbers. There are equations between functions. There are sometimes, in the physics literature at least, one sees equations between groups like this. There are equations, or let's say maybe equalities between points in space-time, that we may have two points in space-time and talk about whether they're actually the same point or not. And I'm pretty sure that there's a lot more, that there are other more kinds of equality as well. And so what is actually the meaning of all this? And in other words, how can we define equality? You know, in principle, we'd like to have every mathematical object to be defined in some way, and so this should also apply to equality in some sense. And so let's just look at how equality is traditionally defined. In order to understand the meaning of equality, you have to go to the foundations of mathematics. In some sense, this talk is about foundations of mathematics. And in the foundations of mathematics, so these foundations are given by first order logic and set theory, at least conventionally. And in these foundations, if you really look at it, every mathematical object is a set. And so this includes things like numbers, functions, manifolds, also points in a manifold. All these things are sets. And so then there is, in set theory, this axiom of extensionality, which tells us when two sets are equal. And so what it says that is that two sets are equal if and only if they have the same elements. And so this may sound a little bit circular, but it's actually not. Because so what this means precisely is that A is equal to B.
I was thinking this would have a pointer.
If and only if, for all other sets X, X is an element of A if and only if it's an element of B. So on the right-hand side, we have a logical equivalence. And through this axiom says the two sets are equal if and only if, they have the same elements. And so typically, I think this is considered to be an axiom. So in particular, this also means that since the elements of a set or any other mathematical object are in themselves sets, again, we also have a notion of equality automatically on every mathematical object. Like manifolds, we have a notion of equality of functions and so on, which comes from this. And so in this sense, we are used to assuming that every mathematical object comes equipped with the notion of equality of its elements. And one thing that I would like to argue is that assuming this is very often misleading and actually is not, makes some things look more complicated than they actually are. And if you simply drop this assumption, then your mathematics in certain situations looks kind of simpler. And I'm going to present some examples of that. And but first, let me then instead say how equality sort of, or what I would like to proposed, and I'm pretty sure this is not original, how equality should be defined. And so if we do not have, if not every set comes equipped with an underlying notion of when two elements are equal, so we still want to use equations, I suppose, and we want to do the same kinds of things. What do we do then? So first of all, we have dropped this. And so instead of, the first thing we have to do is kind of a change in how we think about sets or mathematical objects that have underlying sets. And so typically, or at least me personally, I think about a set as a kind of a discrete collection of points. But now when you drop this notion of equality, I think it's better to think of it as a kind of some kind of more amorphous mass, which doesn't have any well-defined distinction between its elements. Okay, as I said, we still want to use equations, and we want to compute with equations or do all sorts of things with equations. So what do we do instead? And so what I would like to kind of propose is the idea that one can often extract a notion of equality from the other structure that one has in a mathematical object. So I think this is one of the key ideas that typically mathematical objects have many kinds of structure, and one can define equality in terms of those. So maybe I can just repeat the question and let me know if I reproduced it correctly. That even if you don't have, if you don't use this notion of equality, you can still talk about whether an element is contained in two, maybe contained in two different sets.
I see,
you're
still talking about equality
set. No, not necessarily, no. You can also just forget about that. You can, actually, that depends. So I think it depends. So it depends on what you want to do. If you want to do a set theory, and you want to study properties of sets and their sizes and all these things, you still would want to have a notion of equality. And in this case, you would still essentially define it like this. But if what you want to do is not set theory, and I'll just get to an example in a bit, then there is no. Then I think there is little need to also have a notion of equality for sets. So as an example, let me I'll try to give some examples which are relatively close to what theoretical physicists do, but still kind of mathematically precise, and that one can actually. Make sense of them mathematically, and so one of these examples is causal sets. So remember that causal sets are kind of an approach to quantum gravity in which space-time is modeled in terms of this so-called causal set, and a causal set is just a set C equipped with a binary relation written as this kind of curvy less than or equal to, which satisfies reflexivity and transitivity, anti-symmetry, local finiteness. And so we just think of this binary relation as saying that under what condition, when a certain point lies in the causal past of another point. This is what I'm sort of trying to capture with this structure, right? That the axioms and just say that every point lies in the causal past of itself, and if x lies in the causal past of y, then y lies in the causal past of and y lies in the causal past of z, then x also lies in the causal past of z, and so on. And so if we look, for us, the anti-symmetry axiom is, I think, the interesting one, because this talks about equality between points of this kind of space-time, C. And if we go back and I was saying we should forget that there's this underlying notion of equality. And if we do this, then what do we make of this axiom? And I think what one can make of it is so one can regard it as a definition of equality. So this is an example of what I meant, that one can try to define equality in terms of the other structure that you have on your mathematical objects. And so in this case, we can simply say that we call two elements x and y equal if and only if both each of them lies in the causal past of the other. And so in physics terms, we are sort of stipulating that any causal loop just counts as a single point. And I'm not quite sure about it. Oh, so this is a partial ordering, right? So. Oh, it doesn't matter. This is just I was talking about causal sets to illustrate the concept in physics terms, but this is just a mathematical definition applying to any kind of, technically speaking, pre-ordered set. Yes, exactly. Yes. Although I am kind of assuming that reflexivity and transitivity and so on holds, this is relevant for the resulting notion of equality to behave as we would expect it to behave. So I'm assuming it to be some kind of order structure. And so this kind of automatically is guarantees that there are no causal loops because we just declare a causal loop to be only one point. And later on, I'm going to explain another kind of way of thinking about this. And also the local finiteness axiom actually, or at least implicitly, uses the notion of equality. Namely, when you count, so the number of points intermediate between X and Z and the causal structure, the axiom says that this number of points should be finite. But now when you count this number, you are also using some kind of notion of equality because how do you know when, well, you can try to enumerate some of those points, but how do you know whether that enumeration is complete? Well, you should sort of check whether whenever you take any point, it's equal to one which you have enumerated. So in this way, also the local finiteness axiom uses a notion of equality. And then for this one, you can take that definition. Another example is from quantum foundations. So this is kind of coming from the work of Speckens, and actually pretty much everything that I'm going to say is due to him. But I'm just sort of calling things a little bit differently, and otherwise it's essentially Rob Speckens' work. So let P be a collection of preparation procedures on a physical system, and M be a collection of measurement procedures. So the idea is that one can combine any preparation procedure little p with any measurement procedure little m, and this will result in outcome probabilities for that measurement. So these probabilities for outcomes x. And I was actually looking for a pointer, but yeah. And two preparations, now we can define two preparations to be equal. We want to define this in terms of the structure that we have. And the structure in this case are these outcome probabilities. So and this is actually Speckens' definition, he just didn't call it equality, that two preparation procedures are regarded as equal if and only if one obtains the same outcome probabilities for all measurements. And similarly, we can define two measurements to be equal if and only if they give the same statistics for any preparation. And now this may look So now you might object, well, this is kind of stupid. You're calling something equality, which is not equality, because it may have, for example, two preparation procedures which are implemented differently in a laboratory, right? Also, this definition would regard them as equal. But I think, so this is totally analogous to how we would regard two functions as equal, simply because they behave in the same way. They take the same values on all points, even though as algebraic expressions, they're not considered equal. They may be implemented in different ways, just like the when the preparation procedures are implemented in different ways, they may still give the same behavior, and then according to that definition, they would be considered equal. And so if one then studies things like non-contextuality and hidden variables, then this notion of equality is kind of the relevant one for talking about non-contextual hidden variables. But yeah, I don't want to go into the details of that. So another example is kind of social equality. So I'm just, more or less, I can't say much about this, so I'll just quote a couple of statements from Wikipedia, which actually seems to have pretty good definitions. So social equality is a state of affairs in which all people within a specific society or isolated group have the same status in certain respects. So also here, note the point that sort of one has to define equality. It's not a priori given, but we have to sort of define what we actually mean by that. And but even then, there are still different ways to make this precise, or to make this more concrete. Namely, for example, equality of outcome, which describes a state in which people have approximately the same material wealth, or in which general economic conditions of their lives are similar. This means, well, two people are considered equal as soon as they have the same things. But so this is typically not one nowadays one means by social equality, right? It's rather more like equal opportunity, which is the stipulation that all people should be treated similarly, unhampered by artificial barriers or prejudices or preferences. So here, I hope that one can see that in this context, at least, the notion of equality is highly non-trivial, and there's actually, seems to be a big philosophical literature on what this equality should mean. You may have heard terms like gender equality, racial equality, and I think these are really the same, but restricted to certain groups of people. Now let's go back to the mathematical examples, and for example, metric spaces. So if you want to do a little bit of geometry, so this is supposed to be an example of a more geometrical nature, but so let X be a set equipped with a distance function, which is simply a function like this, X times X to the non-negative reals, such that any point has distance zero from itself, and satisfying the triangle inequality. Then we can similarly define two more points to be, two points X and Y to be equal if and only if they have distance zero. Again, we're defining equality in terms of the other structure. And so with this definition, the axiom for metrics that is usually imposed, namely two points of distance zero if and only if they're equal, now becomes actually the actual definition of equality. And so what is the kind of the general pattern here? And I think one can nicely describe this by something that's called Leibniz's law, or identity of indiscernibles. And this says that two things, X and Y, are equal if and only if they have exactly the same properties. So for all P here on the right, P ranges over all properties that the objects X and Y may have. And so this says that X has the property P if and only if Y has the property P. And if that is the case, we're going to call X and Y equal. And I think this is a pretty useful notion of equality. And, but note that it depends on the properties P that one considers. And so one of the consequences of the identity of indiscernibles, or one kind of its interpretations, is that equal things can be substituted for each other. In the sense that if X is equal to Y and P of Y holds, then also P of X holds. And so to give an example to show this is what this actually entails, consider the property, take P to be the property of being equal to Z, where Z now is some third thing. And then what this says that if, just plug this in for P, and what we then get if X is equal to Y, and Y is equal to Z, then X is equal to Z. So this is the transitivity of equality. And so typically, applying this principle of identity of indiscernibles means that two elements are equal, are kind of declared to be equal if and only if they cannot be distinguished by the structure that we have on the object. So, and if we now go back to the previous examples, they're actually all of this kind. And so for the causal sets, if we have, remember that X was, I called X equal to Y if and only if X was in a causal past of Y and Y in a causal past of X. But if that is the case, that means that they are actually indistinguishable from the point of view of the causal structure. Because, well, whenever X is in a causal past of some third point Z, then also Y is, and conversely. And hence, all the physics that you're going to do on that causal set will not, if assuming that the physics is only defined in terms of the causal structure, then you will not be able to distinguish X and Y by the physics alone. And for this reason, I think one can as well call useless as the definition of equality.
This use of the identity of the center means there are no manifold symmetries.
That what?
There are no manifold symmetries. If you have a matrix manifold, I have a killing vector, a killing field, left field, right field, then I can collapse by one dimension of the manifold without changing any properties.
Well, you, no. I would say you are changing the properties. You're changing the dimension, for example. The dimension is a property of a manifold.
But if I have a symmetry, then any two points related by the symmetry are the same value as the log function that I can get if I have the same
properties. Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's right. So if you have. No. They won't have the same properties. So, for example, one property that you can consider would be. Lying in the causal past of some fixed third point Z. If a certain point X has the property of lying in the causal past of Z, now you apply a symmetry to X, it will lose, it may lose that property, right? It may end up in a totally different place.
It's in the causal past of the symmetry translates the whole manifold.
Yes. But then you are applying the symmetry not only to the points but also to the you're applying it also to the property. But the property should still be the same, namely lying in a causal past of Z.
But Z and Z prime here are the same issue. They're not distinguishable.
Not in my definition of equality, no. Z and Z prime are not the same point then.
I disagree, but that's what's arguing about this.
Okay. Yeah, maybe we can talk about that later. And so, in the quantum foundations example, if P and Y have the same statistics, then we call P1 and P2 have the same statistics, then I sort of call them equal. And that also means that they are operationally indistinguishable. No matter what you do with them, what kind of transformations or measurements you try to apply, you're not going to be able to tell P1 and P2 apart just by looking at the statistics. And finally, on a metric space, if we have two points X and Y with zero distance, then they're also geometrically indistinguishable. And because the triangle inequality then guarantees that they will have the same distances to any third points that. And finally, for the social equality example, I'm not 100% sure how to relate this or how to regard it as an application of identity of indiscernibles. If two people have the same wealth, they are equal in a sense of equality of outcomes, then they suppose one can consider them to be economically indistinguishable because they can buy exactly the same things, and, for example. But with the other definition of equal opportunity, I'm not quite sure how that would correspond to, which properties that would correspond to in identity of indiscernibles. Now, remember on the first slide, I had also this equation between two groups. And so can we also get this if we apply identity of indiscernibles? And if we apply identity of indiscernibles to a pair of groups, we get the definition that two groups are equal if and only if they satisfy the same logical sentences, where so a logical sentence means something like kind of properties that the group may have expressed in terms of logical mathematical statements. For example, for all x in the group, there exists an element y such that x is equal to y squared. And so this would be saying that every element has kind of a square root. And note that sort of when talking about groups, I'm kind of assuming that groups come equipped with the notion of equality. But yeah, that's not going to talk about that, but about the equality of groups themselves. So then we would obtain from identity of indiscernibles that two groups are equal if and only if they have all the same logical properties like this, for example, like this one, that every element has a square root. And but now there exists G and H that are equal in this sense, despite not being isomorphic. So if you apply identity of indiscernibles, we find that two groups would be called equal. There are cases when two groups would be called equal, although they are not isomorphic. And so I suppose this is strange. We didn't want this, right? What we really meant by an equality of groups was an isomorphism, that we can find a surjective and injective homomorphism between the two groups. So hence we can ask, kind of identity of indiscernibles has kind of failed us here. So is there a notion of equality of groups which captures this equation between the two groups? And so if there is, then we might also kind of suppose that in such a notion of equality, two objects may be equal in not only just one way, but they may be equal in different ways. And because, well, there are many isomorphisms in the group spin 6 and a group SU4.
Do you have an example
of
two groups?
Yes, so apparently all free groups, all non-abelian free groups have this property independently of the number of generators. So if you download my slides and click on that link, then that. But apparently there are many more examples in the mathematical literature. I haven't really looked at this in much detail. So in order to tackle this issue, I would like to talk a little bit about equality in homotopy type theory. And so homotopy type theory is a kind of an emerging new branch of mathematics which can serve as a foundation of mathematics, an alternative to the conventional ones in terms of logic and set theory. And so one of the features that it has is it's kind of elegant, it's an elegant treatment of equality, which will let us do that and will actually let us make sense of an equality of groups. And so in the following, I would just want to kind of give some exposition of this, but in a very informal style, which is such that anyone who actually knows a little bit of homotopy type theory would probably start frowning. So I'm going to use very kind of familiar language, which just makes it a bit distorted. But. So to start, let spaces be the collection of all topological spaces. And in homotopy type theory, this collection of all spaces is actually a space in its own right, so that every space then becomes a point of this thing. And now when you have a space A, and you have points x and y of that space, I'm going to write x equals y for the space of all paths from x to y in A, right? Continuous paths. And so for now, this is just kind of a funny notation. And in general, so there may be many paths now from x to y. So in the following, I would kind of like to point out that this notation is actually meaningful. So there are many paths from x to y. And for regard to this path, space of paths, as the definition of equality, that can reinterpret as saying that there are many ways in which x and y can be equal. And moreover, if we have two such paths, or two equalities between x and y, we can also ask whether these two equalities are themselves equal or not. So we can talk about this space of paths, p equals q. And the points of that space are something like paths between paths, right? Or topologically speaking, they're homotopies between the two paths, continuous deformations of the first one into the second. And well, we can continue in that way and talk about paths between paths between paths and so on, but yeah. So this, I suppose many of you already know this from algebraic topology, so it's just a different way of talking about this. And so now let's start to interpret this path space as an actual equality. And so remember previously for identity of indiscernibles, this was concerned with these properties P that an object may have or may not have. And so these properties were kind of functions from the space or A in which the object lives to truth values. A property assigns either a value true or a value false to anything in the universe under consideration, in the collection of things that you want to consider. And but now more generally, in homotopy type theory, we can consider more general properties, namely general functions from a space A to the space of all spaces. So we sort of replace the truth values by the space of all spaces. And what such a function corresponds to, so for every x in A, we have a space P of x. And the rules guarantee that this kind of continuously, that one should think of this as continuously varying in x. So, and this is also something that you might have seen, that many of you certainly have seen before. For example, a Möbius strip you can consider in this way as a property P of, with the space A being the circle. So this is a family of spaces indexed by the circle. If you follow the line that wraps around, let's say the one in the center, so that's the circle, and over every point of that, we have, in the perpendicular direction, we have an interval. So this would be such a family of spaces over the circle. And now we can use the inference rules of that theory to construct something which looks very similar to identity of indiscernibles. So previously, we were going from x equals to y to p of x implies p of y. And what we get here is for every path, or in other words, element of x equals y, and every property p, we get a function from the space at x, which is p of x, to the space of y at y, which is p of y. And this is something Turning a path p lying in the path space from x to y into a function from space over x to the space over y. And this is something that I'm sure almost all of you have seen before, namely this is a kind of parallel transport. Right. This does parallel transport in this family of spaces. And I find this quite mind-blowing somehow that parallel transport seems to be related to this identity of indiscernibles principle. And so then from this, one might think that one can use this sort of thing to relate Homotopy type theory to gauge theory or, you know, mathematical structures in physics where parallel transport plays a role. And this does indeed seem to be the case, but somehow it seems to work in a different way that I don't really understand, so that I would like to understand, but I can't really say anything about that. So now, with the example of the two groups in mind, how can I use this stuff to make sense of an equation, an equality of groups? And so previously we had written an isomorphism as an equality. And I now would like to try and explain how this is actually perfectly accurate in homotopy type theory. And it's not just sloppy notation that physicists use, but it actually makes sense. And for simplicity, I'm not going to explain it for groups, but for spaces A and B, which are elements then of the space of all spaces. And so an isomorphism, what is an isomorphism between two spaces? Well, it consists of maps going both ways, such that they are mutually inverse to each other, right? So that means for any point x and a, when you apply f first and then you apply g, you got x back. But and conversely for the other composition then. But what this getting x back means actually is, well, it has to mean this kind of equation there. But now this is an equality. And remember that in this homotopy type theory, these equalities represent spaces of paths. So if you sort of take apart what this definition means, this corresponds to a homotopy equivalence topologically speaking. So instead of having in the topological interpretation, well, no, we have these paths then between g of f of x and x. And the rules guarantee that this is continuously varying in x. And so this is precisely what conventionally calls a homotopy equivalence. And so just as there is a space of all paths between the spaces A and B themselves, because they are both elements of the space of spaces, and so we can talk about these paths themselves, we can talk about whether A is equal to B or not, and if so, in what way and in how many ways. And likewise, we can talk about the space of these isomorphisms or homotopy equivalences. And now there is this axiom of homotopy type theory called the univalence axiom, which, well, at least roughly speaking, states that these two things are actually themselves isomorphic or homotopy equivalent. In a sense that, well, if we take all this, the space of all these paths, and we try to compare it to the space of all these isomorphisms or homotopy equivalences, then these two spaces are themselves homotopy equivalent. And in particular, if we have an isomorphism, which would be a point in the space on the right-hand side, we can use this correspondence to turn it into an element off the left-hand side. And so this way one can turn isomorphisms into actual equalities. And then one can show that this not only holds for spaces, but also for spaces equipped with some additional structure, like groups. And so in this way one can make sense of an equation between groups. Well, this may have been a little bit dry, and it's not going to get much better, but let me just sketch an example application to so that you can see what we can do with it. So if we take a look at a particular such property in the sense of a function from some space to the space of all spaces, we can do this, for example, with the domain space being the space of all groups. So then there's also a way to make sense of this. And we can take this property or this function to be the function which assigns to every group its space of representations. And then if we look back at this kind of this thing which came from identity of indiscernibles, this means that every equality between two groups we can turn into a function that turns the representation of spin 6 into a representation of SU4. And well, this is certainly nothing new, right? You've all known this, that when you have two isomorphic groups, you can turn the representation of the one into a representation of the other. But the new thing here is that in order to derive this, we sort of used parallel transport in the space of all groups. And I'm actually pretty close to the end already, and I think been running pretty fast. This was probably very abstract, and so let me end with something a little bit less abstract, and then there might be some discussion about that. Namely, so the Planck scale, we kind of expect that space-time is, behaves kind of very differently from the macroscopic scale, right? And in particular, we expect some kind of discreteness or blurriness, or so I'm not really sure what exactly that is supposed to mean. Let me pose a few questions on what you would expect to be the case for space-time on the Planck scale. First of all, would it still make sense to talk about the points of that space-time? And assuming that it does, then does it still make sense to talk about whether under what conditions or to talk about the equality of two such points in that space-time? And what kind of equality should that be? So how should it be defined? And is it as in sort of the traditional point of view? Is it just sort of a given structure, or is it defined in terms of something else, or is it like paths in homotopy type theory, or what is it? This is extremely speculative, and maybe this non-traditional nature of equality could somehow account for the blurriness of the space-time. And I certainly expect that this latter item is a very naive idea, and please tell me why. I'm sure that most of you know more about this than me. So that's essentially all that I wanted to say. So let me just kind of briefly summarize that. The kind of the main points that I wanted to get across were So traditionally, every set comes equipped with its own notion of equality of elements. And more generally, that's the case for every mathematical object. But this point of view is often, it makes things look more complicated than they actually are. And from this point of view, it is more appropriate to define the equality of elements of a given object in terms of the other structure that you have on that object. And with certain definitions of equality, like in homotopy type theory, two things can also be equal in more than one way. And finally, this is kind of the main point. Don't hesitate to redefine the notion of equality in whatever way fits your needs, or to call something an equality, although you might you might traditionally have called it an equivalence relation. So if you define some kind of equivalence relation in terms of the other structure that you have on that object, and it's sort of maximally fine-grained in the sense that you cannot get any finer distinctions between the elements of your object anyways, then you can just call that equivalence relation equality and it will not do any harm. So yeah, that's basically all I wanted to say.
Okay, we have plenty of time for questions.
So equality is when you have, when two things are equal with respect to a set of properties. But often, so this works certainly in foundations of quantum theory, when you consider preparations and so on, it's actually sufficient to check a fiducial set of properties, not to check all properties. Mm-hmm. Is that something that's true in general in this type of approach?
Yes, thanks for your question. That's a very good question. And actually, we've seen that this is the case. Let's take the causal sets. Now I have to go back all this one by one. Sorry. Or maybe, no. Okay, so let's take this one. That I was first defining in the causal sets x to be equal to y if x lies in a causal past of y, and y lies in a causal past of x. So in this case, I've only been looking at kind of two properties. And this is exactly a fiducial set in the sense that this implies that x and y have the same causal properties. For whatever other property that you can express in terms of the causal structure, the two are indistinguishable. And the same for the metric spaces.
What about the general theory?
I'm not aware of any general theory, which doesn't mean that there exists, that there is no general theory.
Yeah, just on the last part about speculation applied to fundamental physics. Some years ago with Julian Barber, we considered dynamics based on making sure that every pair of elements in the system was as distinct as possible, that it took the least information possible to distinguish every pair of events or every pair of objects in terms of their properties.
So the objects in that case are the points, or?
Well, they might be events in a causal set,
yeah.
In which case one wants, say, the causal past of every pair of events to be distinguishable with the least amount of information. And this can generate, it's a very non-local dynamics, but this can generate a dynamics.
That can generate dynamics?
A dynamics, yes. Because it's an extremal principle.
Uh-huh, oh, okay.
We call it maximal variety.
The what?
We call it maximal variety.
Okay, maximal variety. Oh, I see, okay. Okay, yeah, thanks. I'll have to read a little bit out of that.
Just as a follow-up, I had a different question, but as a follow-up to that, what about spaces that have automorphisms? So. Normally, do you distinguish any two elements? I mean, normally, two elements can be related by an automorphism.
Yes.
Like in
right.
Euclidean space, any point can be brought to any other point by translation. So do we distinguish them, or clearly, we shouldn't identify them all, because we'd be left with just a
right.
point.
Right, and actually, so that goes back to Lee's question earlier on. I'm not sure if you were here.
Oh, I was just came in at that point.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose I can try to explain that again. Mm-hmm. So let's say that we have some kind of light cones or well, the causal path. We look at a point Z.
Can you turn on the light?
Oh.
I mean, I'm not talking.
Light?
Those people.
And so now I'm going to define a property of points X of that causal set. And that property is going to be lying in a causal path of Z, where Z is just some third point. So the property P of X, I'm defining to be given by, well, ignore this equal sign for a moment, maybe. Ignoring to be given by X in the causal path of Z. So here you have to think of this as the truth value of this statement. So maybe I should put a question mark here or something. And now if we apply an a symmetry transformation to this space-time, let's say a symmetry transformation F, which takes this point somewhere else. I shouldn't draw a path here. Which takes this point somewhere else, then we have F of X here. No, because we're still looking at the same property, which should not have to transform the property.
Then you have to apply the same principle to Z.
You're assuming that you know what the point Z is and that you can distinguish it.
So you're
assuming that the points are distinguishable.
There are two properties here. So there's this one, and there's kind of a property P prime, which asks whether a given X lies in the causal path of F of Z. And these are two properties, and we need to have, in order for two points to be equal, we need to have equivalence with respect to both of these properties.
But that assumes that Z has an intrinsic definition, which belies the whole point.
So again, so if we apply the definition in order to check whether this is the case, we need to check whether for all P of F of X is equivalent to P of X, right? We need to check for all properties P whether F of X having that property, that F of X has that property if and only if X has that property. This is just identity of indiscernibles. If I apply the definition of identity of indiscernibles to this, I end up having to answer this question. Yes, I understand.
To another point, which F of X is in the causal past of.
But there is no condition here. I'm not imposing any condition which would tell me that you also have to change this property P.
But then you're assuming that Z has an
intrinsic definition. So we are comparing here a point X with a point F of X. And when we compare these two points, well, we just need to look at under the thing for all their properties.
I think the question is that in order to say the properties, all the properties are the same, aren't you then relying on some notion of equality of properties?
No.
Well, why not? I mean, you're saying that P and P prime are different properties.
No, I'm not saying they're different. I'm not comparing P and P prime. I'm saying this logical equivalence is supposed to hold for all properties P. In particular, for this P and for this P. But in order to apply this condition, there's no need to compare P and P prime.
I think another way of stating the question is, why don't you admit as a property being equal to X naught, where X naught is your favorite element of the causal set?
Because, in principle I do, but only kind of in hindsight, because being equal to is precisely the thing that we're trying to define, so we can't. When we try to define, so we want to try and define equality in terms of the other structure that we have on the set. In this case, it's just the causal ordering. So we are only allowed to formulate properties that refer only to the causal ordering and not to...
But to causal ordering and possibly to distinguish elements of the causal set.
And we're allowed to refer to causal ordering, but not to the equality of elements yet.
But you can refer to distinguished elements.
Yes,
to the ordering.
Yes. And
so
yes,
that's
yes.
The key.
And that's exactly what happens here. That the set is sort of regarded as a distinguished element.
I see. I had a different question.
Maybe that's a better way of saying it.
So I wonder if this has any application to computing language, programming languages, or something like that. Because, for example, in Lisp, which is a language that I tend to use a lot, there are, in fact, many notions of equality. So they have four or five different equality predicates or whatever, the functions that you can use. So some strict equality could mean residing in the same cell in memory, the same location in memory, or on the other hand, you can have two integers which might be in different places in memory, but they're regarded as equal under a different notion, but they might not be equal to a floating point number, which in fact, you know, so 3.0 might not be equal to the integer 3, and then there's a more less restrictive notion of equality in which they're equal. In practice, you find that you actually do have to use these different notions of equality when you write programs. So does this, are you aware of any, can this be used to systematize, you know, in computer science somehow?
Yes, so that's a very good point. So I've been talking about this homotopy type theory for some time, and that actually comes at least partly from computer science and precisely the theory of programming languages. Functional programming. So I don't know about Lisp in particular, but also homotopy type theory, which you can in some sense understand as a programming language, has two notions of equality. The one that I've introduced and the other one is more something like equal by definition, which we could use here. So here I could say, well, I'm using this P simply as shorthand notation for this expression. And this would be this kind of stronger kind of equality. So yeah, it really comes from programming languages.
So getting back to the slide that's up here, you mentioned in the case of equality of groups that this notion of definition by comparing properties doesn't give you the right answer.
Yeah.
So if you use the homotopy type theory approach for these three examples, do you get the same thing as these definitions?
Okay, I think you got me there.
Okay.
I don't know because, yeah. So I haven't actually thought about yet how what these examples would look like in homotopy type theory because, there's a lot that one has to sort of build up in any foundation of mathematics, I think, before being able to do any concrete mathematics, and I'm actually not yet to the level where we can do a lot of. And I haven't looked at this from that point of view, but yeah. So.
So firstly, just a quick comment on this discussion earlier. I think the objection isn't that there's anything wrong with your definition. It's just that in the presence of a symmetry, the only physically meaningful propositions are the ones that respect the symmetry or something like that. My question was, you always seem to just be talking about something that just has a particular mathematical structure on it. But in the set theory foundations, you can do something like put a group structure on and a topological structure and ask that they play nicely together. Can you still do that naturally here?
I suppose it depends on the first point. I think that's a very nice resolution of the disagreement. But I've been applying the definition of identity of indiscernibles also to properties which are not themselves invariant under the symmetry. Whereas if you apply it only to properties that are invariant with respect to the symmetry, then you would have to you would also obtain that x and f of x are actually equal. So this is maybe a nice example showing that it does depend on what particular collection of properties you apply this for. And the second point, what if we have different structures on the same set? I think that in most situations, you not only have just these two structures independently, but you also have a certain compatibility assumption between them. And so that should probably guarantee that if you define equality in terms of the one or in terms of the other, you get the same thing. You get the same relation in the sense that they will be logically equivalent, so they will imply each other. Or sometimes, if that is not the case, then you might have to take the conjunction of the two. So look at the whole structure together. I'm not sure if that does that answer the question. Yeah, I don't know what else to say.
Next, oh.